Begin the current daf Masechta Bava Basra daf Kuf Ayin Hey. Begin on the bottom of Kuf Ayin Dalma Beis, 5 lines up in the bottom of the Yamut. But the Gemara introduces a halacha that will relate back to the topic of our Mishnah, which discusses the laws of a milva of regarding a loan. So Amar Rav Huna said, Shchivim Rash Hekdush Kol Nochasav. The dying person sanctified all his possessions to Hekdush. Vama. Then he says, oh wait a second, but not everything is mine. Mana Laplein Biyadi. There's 100 zuz that I owe someone else that's by me. Says Rav Huna Neman, the person is believed. Chazaka in Odom Isik Nunyala Hekdush. There's a presumption that a person would not play games, play a trick on Hekdush. If he's being Makdash everything, then he says, wait a second, 100 of the zuz belongs to someone else, you give that 100 zuz to that other person. On that maskabler of Nachman, Nachman asked, wait a second. V'chi Odom Isik Nunyala Banov, what? Does a person play games with his children? In other words, when he is about to die and his children are going to inherit all his possessions. And then if he's going to go ahead and bequeath it to other people, which will cause a loss to his children, you think he would do that too? Just like he wouldn't play games on Hekdush, he wouldn't play games with his kids. And yet, the Ravish and Muldamar Tavayu, they both say, if a dying person says, which he wasn't Hekdush, instead of Hekdush getting it in the Halacha Rav Huna, is that his children will inherit it. But he says that there's 100 zuz of that person that's by me, Omar tenu naisen. So say Rav Shmuel, only if he says, give it to that person, do you give it? Lo yamar tenu ein naisen. If he doesn't say give it, you don't give it to that person, because although he admitted, so to speak, that there's 100 zuz of that person by him, you're not going to give it. Why? Rather, you have to say, the reason why you're not going to give it is because, you see, Adam asui chaloy lahasbi es banav. A person wants that he should not satiate his children. His intention was that they should not consider themselves as wealthy people, and that is consideration that people shouldn't look at him or his kids as wealthy people. So he says, he's about to die, and he's like, wow, it's the Yerusha they're going to get. He says, no. He says, he's passing on, he says, $100,000 of this dollars belongs to someone else. And people go, the kids are not going to get so much money, and that's his intention. So therefore, only if he says, tenu, give it, he's trying to say to really give it. But if not, even if he says, mona shall play nibiyadi, you don't give it. So therefore, as Rav Nachman, as you continue, tab of kuf ein hei man alef, so hachinami, so the same halacha should apply in Rav Huna's case of Hekdush, that you could say that was his intention, that Adam asur shaloy lesbi, as asme, a person's intention is that shouldn't satiate himself. He doesn't want people considering himself as a wealthy guy. So he says, don't think I'm giving Hekdush so much. I'm not such a wealthy person. Half my money belongs to that person. But really not. He just doesn't want people considering him so wealthy, just like we see from Rabbi Shmuel's halacha, when he says, mana l'plein b'yodi, you don't actually give it, he just doesn't want to have an ayin hara. So why is Rav Huna say that he's believing to give that mana to that person? If he would say tenu, we understand, but Rav Huna's halacha was just, he says, mana l'plein b'yodi, so why are you giving it? Why is it any different than Rabbi Shmuel's halacha? Says the Gemara, ki kam Rav Huna hasam, when did Rav Huna say that, in the case of Hekdush, that you would give it to that other person, unlike seeming Rav Shmuel's halacha, is denakat shtara. It's only because the lender has and produced a document, and the borrower admits, so since he admits that, yes, that person has 100 mana by me, by a mana, so therefore you're going to give it. But in contrast, if there's no document, and it just says mana play miyadi, then of course Rav Huna would agree to Rav Shmuel's halacha that you wouldn't give it to that other person, because it's just shaloi lasbiya as atmei ves mana. Now, however, the Gemara continues asking, it says, wait, so machlal de Rav Shmuel, so the inference is in Rav Shmuel's halacha, which was the parallel Rav Huna's just regards to one's children, in contrast Rav Huna is regarding Hekdush, but we agreed that both of them, you wouldn't make a kinun, you wouldn't play games with Hekdush or your kids. So the inference would be that they were talking about Delay Nakat Shtar, where the lender does not have a document, and that's why in Rav Shmuel's halacha, that you wouldn't give it if he doesn't say tenu. But then the question is for the other half of their halacha. So then, Amar Tanu, when he says to give it to that person, so then, why is it Naisnan? Why do you actually give it? Milva Pehava. Even if he's admitting that he owes the money to that person, he says give it, at the most, since there's no document, it's an oral loan. V'Rav Shmuel Damar Tavayu, they themselves both say, Milva Peh, when there's an oral loan, Eina Goyva Loimena Yershim Loimena Lekuchas. You do not collect it, neither from the inheritors, or from consumers, from those who bought it from that person. Whereas Rashbam addressed, and he says, and if you're going to say the reason why they're obligated is only because of mitzvah kaim divrames, is just because his obligation, even if not because of a loan, just because of to fulfill the words of the dying person, but then they should not have be obligated to fulfill their father's words until after he passes away, which would then be based on the premise of mitzvah kaim divrames. Rabbi Shmuel's halacha sounds like that, no, automatically when he said tenu, you got to give it, which means before he dies or after he dies. So it can't be mitzvah kaim divrames because that would only be after he dies. So then what's the obligation after that he dies if it's not because of mitzvah kaim divrames, if we're saying that it's an oral loan, and the oral loan you cannot collect from the Yershin. So how could we answer that to resolve Rav Shmuel and Rav Huna is that Rav Huna is talking about that there is a document and Rav Shmuel is talking about there's no document. If there's no document, then you run into the problem of Rav Shmuel contradicting themselves that you cannot collect from the Yershin. So El Amar Rav Nachman, rather, he gives a different resolution. He says, Idi v'idi, both cases, whether a dying person says, when he says the case of Man L'Plein Biyodi, that other person, a hundred of his is by me, and then he's coming to either take away from what he was going to give to Hektish, or whether he's going to come to take away from, that they're going to collect from his kids. Either way, both cases, says Rav Nachman, are dinokichtar, that the lender is producing a document that this Shechimra, that this dying person owes him 100 zuz. And B'lekasha, still it's not a contradiction, these two halachas. Because the case of Rav Huna regarding Hektish was Toma de Mekuyim, where he has a henpek where it's already confirmed in the court that this is a valid document. Valid document, and he's admitting, of course, to go ahead and collect from Hektish because he wouldn't make a kanunya, so what's the concern? So of course. But the case of Rav Shmuel is, yes, although there's a document, because no document you can't collect from Yershin, there's a document, but delay Mekuyim, but it wasn't yet verified. So now we understand Rav Shmuel's halacha. Omar Tanu, when the debtor, when he's passing on, and he says, give it to that person, Kaime Lishtari, he's essentially validating the documentation, so the lender doesn't have to validate anymore, because it's when you have the litigant, the defendant's own admission, so that itself is verifying the documentation. So then he could go ahead and collect from the Yershin, because it's a Milva Bishtar, and it's already been verified. Loimar Tanu, but if he doesn't say give, then Lekaime Lishtari, then he is not... If he doesn't say give, then that's not considered verification of the documentation, because we're concerned that the only reason why he says, oh, that man l'plein biyadi, is like we said, because he doesn't want to satiate his children. And therefore then the lender cannot collect. It doesn't mean forever. It means until he verifies and validates the document, only then would he be able to collect. But that explains why there's a difference between tnu and not tnu, and why it doesn't contradict Rav Huna, because they both agree to the same concept that you would not make a kanunya. A person would be doing something shalei lasbias banav, but it's when he's producing a document. If it's verified, whether by itself or because he says tnu, which verifies it, of course, both of them would agree you could collect. But when there's not verified, in the case of the Rav Shmuel, which was an unverified document, then if it doesn't say tenu, then he cannot collect, again, until he himself verifies it. Similarly, Amar Rabba, similar, continue on this concept, this differentiation of Rav Shmuel regarding between tenu or not. So Rabba said the following halacha, Shchidmar sha'amar manu l'plein biyadi, the dying person who says that is 100 zuz, a mana by that person has by me, now, but v'amr yisaymin parano, so, but the orphans say, we paid that up already. Says Rabbis, and they're believed. Where tenu man l'plaini, as we explained the previous halacha, when the guy says give, so there's a greater strength, more power to the collector. So when he says give this money to that person, and va'amri yisayim parano, and the orphans say, oh, we paid it up already, then ain't the money, then they're not believed. Now, on the surface, that makes sense, but then the Gemara asks, klapi lai, which way is this going? Ibcha mistaber, it's more logical the other way. Why? Amar tenu mana, if the dying person had said, give this person this mana. So Kivin the Paskabun Lamilsa, since the father said a definitive thing because he conclusively said and he commanded to pay it up, as we said that is the requirement that the lender could go ahead and collect. So Ikalame the Paris, and then you could say and entertain this idea that yeah, maybe the orphans paid and they could make that claim that they paid. And it would make sense because since the father said they have to, so then they would go ahead and go through with it because it's an obligation. But Man L'plein biyadi, but if the father just said that, oh, there is 100 mana, there's 100 zuz that this guy has by me, but kibin dulei pasik avun lamilsa, but since he didn't say a definitive thing, because he didn't say tnu, so then ikulamim dulei parit, and to the contrary, that case we could entertain to say that they did not pay, because we don't have a total obligation yet, so why should we believe them in that case, that they did pay it up? It makes sense the opposite way. So Ella rather says the Gemara, you're right, of course it would be the opposite of the way it was said. Rather, iet mar hochi et mar. If it was said the way Rabbi said it, it was said in a different context, a different halacha. Shchiv mar sh'amar man l'plein biyadi. the dying person says that there's a mana from that person that's by me, the Amri Yisayim, and the orphans say, not that we paid, because we paid would be the opposite of how it was originally said by Rabbah. Rather, the orphans make a different claim. They say, Chazava Amalonu Abba Parati. Yeah, our father said that this guy, he owes this guy has money by him. But then he later told us that he paid him up. Oh, so then, Neman, then they're believed. My time, what's the reason? It's Kur Mitker. We could say that maybe the father recalled. And it makes sense because that's why originally he never said Tenu, he didn't say give. He said, you know, this guy, I owe him $100. So if the orphan said, but then later our father said, oh, I paid him up, that would make sense. Because that's why he never said Tenu. He was just saying, oh, I owe. And they said, no, I really paid him up. But Tenu mana l'plaini, if he said, give that guy a mana, v'am yisayim, and then the orphans say that, yeah, our father said that. V'chazav ama abba parat, but then our father said that I paid him up. Ein mana, they're not believed, because dim isa de paria, if it was true that the father had paid him up, l'hava ama Tenu, he would never have said give. Give is, I know. Sons, I'm passing on, give this guy the money. But they're not believed to say that our father later told us that he paid it up. If he doesn't say Tenu, then that would make sense because that wasn't a conclusive and definitive thing as is the case by Tenu. Now, a related discussion by Rava, he says, Shchiv Merah Shahida, a dying person who admits. In other words, there's a creditor that claims to the dying person and says, Mana li biyadcha, that you owe me $100. And the dying person says, yes. So, regarding that type of a case, when as the Gemara says in Masechta Sanhedrin, Daf Chof Tes Mabeis, where someone makes a claim and the defendant says yes, so the halacha is that in general, that he has to say, but atem edai, that you're my witnesses. And if not, then the defendant could say, I was just fooling around with you. I owe you $100. Yes. Right? Only if he says, and you're my witnesses, oh, then that's a real serious thing. So Rav was asking, mahu, what would the halacha be regarding a dying person? Tzorch lema atem edai, does he have to say that you're my witnesses? Or ain't tzorch lema atem edim, or maybe doesn't have to say, a dying person is different, doesn't have to say you're my witnesses. Moreover, tzorch she'em kesoibu, does he have to say, and I want you to write this, because as the Gemara says, the Cheskes Abatim, we had a memor aleph, that when you admit in front of two people, you additionally have to say, kesoibu, write it down. Or ain't tzorch lema kesoibu, maybe in this case of a dying person, you don't even have to say, write it down. As the Gemara explains, the fundamental principle that the question hinges on is Adam Mishata B'Shas Misa, would a person fool around when he's passing away? Which we usually say, yeah, I was just joking around with you. If I said you're my witness, it's fine, but if not, nah. So would a person fool around? Oh, you ain't Adam Mishata B'Shas Misa. A person's not fooling around when he's passing on. And if he says yes, he means he really owes the money. So the Gemara says, Basa Dabai, Hada Pashta. After that, he had asked the question, Rabba. He then resolved it and he said, Ein Adam Mishata B'Shas Misa. A person is not fooled around when he's passing on. And therefore, even if he doesn't say Atem Edai, he's admitting and he owes the money. And moreover, regarding the other question, and since it's a real admission, the words of a dying person are like they're written and given over, and he doesn't even have to say kesuvu to write it down. It's implicit that he wants it to be written down. It's as if it is written down, and therefore there's a full-fledged obligation from this admission of the shchimra regarding the claim of that claimant. Now the Gemara continues with and concludes with a general halacha regarding the laws of loans, which we were discussing in the previous Mishnah, as follows. Hamalves chaver bishtar. Someone lends his friend money in a document, which, as Rashbam points out, even if it doesn't have a chrayis, doesn't say that there's insurance on the loan in the documentation, but as the Gemara paskins above metzita tetzvav on the base, a chrayis is tal seiferhu. If the insurance is not written, the responsibility is not written that the borrower has in the document, it's a scribal error, and it's like as if it's written that there is insurance that the borrower is taking full responsibility for the loan, which means to say that all the borrower's properties have a lien on that, that he's going to insure the lender. So the halach is, give him the chasim mishabadim. So the lender, if the borrower doesn't have money to pay up, so from the date of the loan, any of the properties had a lien on it, and if anyone bought it, if it was sold at that point on, he could collect from those incumbent properties because there was a lien on those properties from the time of the loan. That's if it was a loan in the document. Ali de Aidim, but if it was only through witnesses, but it wasn't written in the document, then gave him in the chasim nechar, and then he could only collect from the available assets that the borrower has. But if they were sold off already, those assets he cannot collect from, even though it was witnesses, because it wasn't written in the document. Now, we continue on to Amud Beis, where the Mishnah continues and says, let's say haitzi a love that the lender produces on the borrower, ksav yaday, the borrower's own handwriting, shu chayv loy, that he owes money to the lender, like an IOU, but there's no other testimony. then gave him the chasam and the, and then they could collect from the available assets of the borrower, but you cannot collect from the mishbadim, from the incumbent properties, only a loan that's written in the document and has witnesses on it. Because since you have two elements, a document and witnesses, so then the word gets out, and anyone that buys from that properties after that point in time are going to cause loss to themselves because they didn't do due diligence to make sure to leave over available assets by the seller that the lender could be able to collect from them. And therefore, since they bought that incumbent properties, they take that loss if the borrower, who is their seller, defaults, and then the lender could collect from them. But that's only when there was a shtar and edim with the word got out, so they should have known about it. And if not, it's their own problem. Continues the Mishnah, Arev Hayeti La'achar Chisim Shtar, as we discussed also in the previous Mishnahis of Arev. So a guarantor that writes that he's the guarantor after the signatures, after the witness's signatures, where he writes his obligation that me, the son of this person, is the Arev, he writes it in the document after the witnesses had signed, so then gave him an achasim nechayrin. So then the lender, if the borrower defaults, could only collect from the guarantor, which is on some level like an oral guarantee. He could only collect from the available properties of the Arev. And the reason why it's considered an oral obligation is because since the witnesses did not sign on his arevus, because he only signed his responsibility after the witnesses had signed, it's like they're not testifying on his arevus. Which the same halacha would apply if, let's say, he became an arev without a document after the money was given. It's the same idea where, since he's taking responsibility, you could collect from him or from his possessions, but not from, let's say, after the loan, where even the Arab had possessions and he sold them off, then you wouldn't be able to collect from his nechasim mishabadim. And so too says the Mishnah, Maisa Bolaf Neir Bishmal. There was such an incident that came in front of Bishmal. Vamar gave him nechasim necharim. He says that although you could collect from the Arab, you could only collect from his available possessions because the witnesses did not sign. It's not considered an obligation that he took. It was written in the shtar that anyone that bought from the Arab should be responsible as nechasim mishabadim. Now, however, Amalei Benanis, but Benanis said to Bishmal, and he disagreed. He says, no. Actually, any guarantor that signs his responsibility after the money was given, which is so to the case of after the witnesses had signed, does not become an arv. And the reason for that is, and therefore you can't collect from the nechasim mishabadim or even from his available possessions, is because it wasn't based on his confidence and trust of the guarantor that the lender had lent the money. The only way he becomes obligated is because it's because of you that I lent it. But if the money was already given and only afterwards did he sign on and say, and you know what, I'll even be the guarantor, that does not obligate him even in his available possessions. So Amalei Lama, Sir Bishmol said to him, but why? Why is there no obligation? He's obligating himself. So Amalei, so Benana said to him, wait a second, I'll explain to you as follows. Hare Achenik is Echad Bishok. Imagine someone's choking someone in the marketplace. And because he says, you owe me money, you better pay me. And this third guy walks along, this friend walks along, he says, leave this guy alone, I'll give you the money that he owes you. Potter, of course he'd be exempt. There's no real obligation, there was no kinyan, there's no being obligating himself in the actual loan, because he didn't lend the money because of the faith that this guy was had. The loan was already lent a few weeks ago. He actually wants to collect it, so he just wants to save his friend. He says, stop choking him, I'll pay it up. But there's no intrinsic obligation to be able to collect from even the Arev's own available possessions. Ella eight, and therefore it says bananas. That's the same thing when he signs on after the money was already given. Ella ezahu Arev shuchayv. Rather says bananas. What is the type of a guarantor that does become obligated in his guarantee? Is if he tells the lender before the loan, he'll vohu vani noisin loch then chayv, and vani noisin loch chayv. In such a case, when he says, lend him and then I'll give you, that's when it becomes obligated. Why? Because it's based on his faith in the guarantor that's why he lent him. That's an obligation that he's obligated in. But regarding the case that you described, not only could you not collect from the chasam eshbadim, but even from the chasam necharin of the arab, you cannot collect. V'amr b'shmol reflected and commented, and he says, if someone wants to become wise, yasik b'din imamin, this should involve himself in monetary law, which is this Seder of Nezikin, which is what we're discussing here, the last of the Babas, of the three parts of the Seder Nezikin, Baba Kama, Baba Metzia, and Baba Basa, which we're at the end over here. So he makes that reflection, says, someone should toil in these monetary laws. There's no greater aspect of Torah wisdom than Dini Mamanis. And vehin kema'ayin hanaveh, and it's like a gushing fountain full of wisdom. But reitzah shi'asik b'dinim mamnes, and whoever wants to toil in the laws of monetary law, yishamish as Shimon ben Anas, should serve and learn by Shimon ben Anas, where as he had this discussion with him, he saw, wow, how intelligent was that response that he had to explain to him why it would not obligate the Arab, even the Chasam Nechayran, if it took place after the actual loan had already happened. Now, the Gemara explains the halacha of our Mishnah, which differentiates between the milva b'shtar and the milva al-peh. Amar Ula, he explains, Dvat Torah, according to biblical law, echad milva b'shtar, ve'echad milva al-peh, whether it's a written loan or an oral loan, gave him the chasam mishabadim. According to biblical law, the lender should be allowed to collect from incumbent properties. My time, what's the reason? Because Ula holds, shibudu deraisa, a lien on this person's properties is a biblical concept. As we find in Devarim Chav Dalet, that Yoytze Lecha Avit, that if you can't pay up, you have to give out your movable items. And the same thing would apply to a person's land. There's a lien on the person's properties if regarding to a loan that he takes, and that's a biblical law, as we find the Pasuk of Yoytze Lecha Avit. So therefore, it doesn't make a difference if it's a written loan or oral loan. It doesn't make a difference. There was a loan, so there's a lien on the person's property. So then why did our Mishnah say that if it's an oral loan, that you cannot collect from a person's properties which he later sold off? Why? There's that lien is biblical. Why could you only collect from available possessions? And that says, Ula, Mishum Pseidid Lekuchis. That was a rabbinic injunction because of the loss of consumers, that they're never going to be able to be careful because they don't know. There's no publicity when there's an oral loan. There's just one guy doing it in a document. It goes to the court system. There's witnesses, documentation. So the word gets out. An oral loan, no one's going to know, and it's going to cause undue losses for commerce. And to prevent those losses for consumers, and thus consumers not willing to buy because then it might be confiscated later and they're not going to get reimbursed. So to prevent that problem, they said that if it's oral loan, you cannot collect from the chasam mishabad. So then the Gemara says, "Ihalchim milv b'shtar nami." Well, then a written loan should be the same thing. Also, there's still going to be a loss for lekuchis when it's going to be collected from their properties, which are incumbent properties that they bought. And that says the Gemara, "No chasam inhu ninu dafside nafshayu." In that case, they're bringing the loss on themselves because, as we already explained, when it's a written loan, then the word is out that they could just do a little due diligence and they would find out to be careful which properties to buy and which ones not to. And therefore, that's not something we have to be concerned for. And then we go with the biblical law that, of course, the lender could collect from the chasam shabbat. That's Ula's interpretation. Rabbi Amar, he says the other way around. He says, Dvar Torah, according to biblical law, echad milva b'shtar ve'echad milva peh, whether a written loan or an oral loan, eina gaiva el mechasim necharin. According to biblical law, you could only collect from the available possessions that the borrower has. My time, what's the reason? And that you cannot collect from the properties that he sold off after the point of the loan before you collect. It's because Shibud Lav Derei. So he holds that, no, the lien is not a biblical concept. That pasuk is actually learned out from other things. But regarding the actual concept that a person's properties become indebted, that's not a biblical concept. So, Umatam Omer Milva Bishta Gavim Nechasim Meshabad Mishin. And why did they say that a loan written in a document you could collect from the common properties? That's a rabbinic injunction the other way, so that you shouldn't block the doors in front of borrowers, because if a lender knows that if he's going to lend money to somebody, many times people don't have cash, but they have assets. But if he knows that the assets can be sold off and he's not going to collect from them, so then he's not going to lend money anymore. If I know you have possessions, and even if he sells, I'll be able to collect from it, then I'll lend you the money. So to prevent people from not having where to borrow from, because the real estate lender is not going to lend, they instituted it rabbinically, then you could go ahead and collect from a loan written in a document. Well, then the question is, Yachim Milva Penami, then even the oral loan should allow that the lender should be able to collect, for this rabbinic reason, from Nechasim Mishabadim. Why did they say there you could only collect from Nechasim Nechayrin? And that says, the Gemara, no, Hasam lest they call it. There the word doesn't get out. That would be way too much of a problem for commerce, as we said, because then the Kuchas are going to lose left and right. They're not going to be aware that there was a lien on this property because it was only oral loan. So they only extended their rabbinic injunction from Milva Bishtar, where then you have the ability to do it in a document, and then you will be able to collect from the Chasam Mishabadim, and that's because rabbinically, so that Shalai Tinal Delz Babnei Lava. So we have these two different interpretations, that of Ula, which holds Shibud is Deraisa, and that of Rabbi, which holds Shibud is Lav Deraisa, and they're coming from different angles, why the halacha ends up being that Milva Bishtar, you could collect from the Chasam Mishabadim, and Milva Pei, you could only collect from the Chasam Nechar. Now, however, the Gemara asked, Umiyama Rabbi Hachi, does Rabbi really say that Shibud is Lav Deraisa, that according to biblical law, there is no lien on a person's property? But Vaha, but as we said in Perek Yeshneichon Nav Kav Chav Dalam Abayz, that they sent from Eretz Yisrael the following halacha, that a firstborn son who takes a double portion in the inheritance of his father, takes a double portion even in a loan that's owed to the father. And Amar Rabba, Rabba explained halacha by explaining that it's only if Gavu Karka, if they end up collecting land for the debt owed to their father, then Yeshlai, then the firstborn gets a double portion, because that's as if there was already a lien, as if the father already owned that land when he was still alive. So therefore, it would be considered b'chal eshayim matzalai, not ra'u, but it's like as if the father already had it when he was alive, because although he never actually got the payment, but the land was already meshubatim. So therefore, in that case, says Rabba, that's when the firstborn will get a double portion. So you see that according to Rabba, and that's what he explains it by Karka, that shibud is deraisa, that the lien is a biblical concept, which therefore allows the firstborn to take a double portion. Whereas gavu mois ain't like. But if you're collecting money, then he doesn't take a double portion, because that it's a loan is to be spent, and that the father never had it, and it's considered row, and then the son doesn't take a double portion. So that contradicts what Rabbi just said before. Rabbi explained that shibud is lav derais, and yet we see from that halacha and Perek Yeshneichon that he holds shibud is derais. So continues the Gemara and says, and v'chitema epech, and if you're going to say that it's the other way around, which actually Rashbam has a different girsa, as the Marashal points out, where according to him the Gemara is entertaining to say that no, Rabba wasn't saying gavu karka yeshloi gavu mois einloi, to the contrary, he was saying gavu karka einloi, that if they're collecting land that you don't get, because shibud is lav deraisa, gavu mois yeshloi, if they collect money, then the son does get a double portion. And the reason why you would say is because since money was lent and money was paid back, so it's almost like as if what was given was always there, and that's what got back, and therefore that is considered asher yematzaloi. Which, however, that's not our girsa, and ultimately the Gemara would disprove this, but according to Rashbam, that's what the Gemara is entertaining, to switch that around, which would resolve Rabba. But our girsa actually is that, and if you're going to switch around and say, in our Gemara, where we had said Ula and Rabba, and would switch around and say, no, the Rabba, the Ula, Rabba who we quote over here by saying that there's no Shibud, that actually wasn't Rabba, that was actually Ula who said that. Udu Ula la Rabba, and Ula who said over here that Shibud is deraisa, that should be switched, and it was Rabba who actually said that, so that would make sense. Rabba over there who says Shibud deraisa is the same as Rabba over here who would be holding Shibud deraisa, and the other Gemara says, no, that's not possible either. Because of Amar Ula, but Ula himself is quoted elsewhere as saying that Dvar Torah, according to biblical law, Bal Chayiv Dine Beziburis. A creditor, according to biblical law, although we say he collects from Bainis, but according to biblical law, he's only allowed to collect from the lowest grade of land that the debtor has. Which the Gemara learns out in the first Perek in Baba Kama Chesem and Aleph from the Pasuk Be'isha Shatar Neisha Ba'yotzi, the one that you're trying to collect from, he brings out what he has to pay up, which is what's normal for a debtor to bring out, is the lowest types of his vessels. So you see that it's only regarding Ziburis that a creditor is allowed to have. But one thing you see from Ula is that he holds clearly that Shibuda, whether it means the lowest grade land, whatever it is, but that lien of Ziburis is a biblical concept. So Ula holds Shibuda is deraisa. So you can't say he's the one that says over here Shibuda is lav deraisa. So it must be that he is the one that holds Shibuda deraisa. So that makes Rabba the one that holds Shibuda is lav deraisa. Well, that contradicts Rabba's other halacha where he's quoted as saying Shibuda is deraisa. So rather, the Gemara gives a different resolution for Rabba. Rabba, taima de b'nei ma Rabba kama. Rabba, who says over there that halacha, that you're going to take the double portion when it's land, he was just coming to explain the rationale of the opinion of what was sent from Eretz Yisrael, who they said, the halacha, that the firstborn takes a double portion by a loan. That Rabba was qualifying their halacha. They who they hold, shibud is deraisa, but that would only apply if it's land that they're collecting. So that could be something that asher yematzaloi. But that wouldn't apply, even if he holds shibud is deraisa, regarding monies. But that was to explain their opinion. However, v'leili severely. But he himself doesn't hold like that. He himself holds that actually a firstborn never takes the double portion in a loan. Doesn't make a difference if they collected land or if they collected money, because again, he holds Shibud is lav deraisa. Now the Gemara continues with a similar machlokes, like between Rabba and Ula, regarding this halacha concept of Shibud is deraisa or not. But however, with a different application, actually quoting a halacha from Rav Shmuel that we mentioned previously on the daf. The Rav Shmuel Dami Tavai, they both say, Milva Apel, regarding an oral loan, Eina Gaiva Loimena Yoshim Loimena Lakuchis. We mentioned this halacha before on the daf regarding a question, a contradiction in Rav Shmuel's own opinions, according to what the Gemara had mentioned earlier. So they say, regarding an oral loan from a creditor, cannot be collected from an inheritor from the debtor or the consumer of that debtor. My time, what's the reason? Because they hold shibuda, the lien that's on the debtor's properties, lav deraisa. It's not a biblical law. In other words, when someone owes someone money, it's only his own person that owes it. But his properties, biblically, there's no lien. And therefore, rabbinically, maybe it's an obligation for him to pay up. But when he sells it off or he dies and his inheritors inherit it, so they don't have an obligation to pay up his debt. And therefore, by an oral loan, we said by a written loan, that's for different reasons why then they would be able to collect. But an oral loan cannot be collected from the Lekuchas or from the Yershim because Shibud is Lav Daraisa. Whereas Rabbi Yechon, Rabbi Shimon ben Lakish, the Amr Tavai, they both say, and they disagree, no, that Milva Peh, an oral loan, is Gaiva Beimen HaYershim Beimen Lekuchas. It could be collected from inheritors or from consumers. My time, what's the reason? Because Shibud is Daraisa. They hold that Shibud is Daraisa. This is paralleling the same Achleikas we had between Ula and Rabba, but with, again, a different application regarding the Milva Peh being collected from the Nechasim of the Yershim of Lekuchas. Now, the Gemara is Meisvei. The Gemara is from the following Braisa on the opinion of Rabbi Shmuel. The Braisa says the following halacha. Hachayfer boy b'shus Rabbi. If someone digs a pit in the public domain, which he's not allowed to, v'navel lo b'shoy ba'arogay, and the ox falls into the pit and kills the guy who's digging the pit in b'shus Rabbi, so pater, the owner of the ox is exempt because it's not his fault. This guy should not be digging a pit over there. V'loyoy, not only that, says the Braisa elashe, in Meisa Ashar, actually, if the ox dies because it fell into the pit, even though it killed the guy who was digging the pit, Yershi Bal Habar, the inheritors of the one who dug the pit, he ended up dying, but his inheritors, Achayavim L'Sham Demei Shor L'Balav, his inheritors have to pay the value of the ox that died, but while killing him in the pit, has to pay it to the owner of the ox, because that was a Bar B'Shus Rabbim, you killed the ox, now you have to go ahead and pay for that value. But one thing we see is that obviously, a milva al peh, which is what hezek is, when someone causes damage, it's something that someone owes money because of the damage that was done to, let's say, the ox that died. But that wasn't a debt that was written in the document. That would be in the class of a milva al peh. It's an oral obligation, an oral loan, that you see you could collect that from the inheritors, which that's difficult to Rav and Shmuel, because they held a milva al peh cannot be collected from a person's nechasim, which are meshubid, that you cannot collect from the kuchas or yershim. And yet, see, here we see clearly from this brisa that could be collected from the yershim. So Amr below Amr Rav, which was the name of Rav, which that resolves his own opinion, is Bish'amad Bedin. Here we're talking about that the father, the one who died, already had gone to court and stood in court and they found him guilty. And once there's an act of the court, that's considered like written in the document. That has the same strength as a written obligation. As the court writes then, and that has the same strength, that's why there's the obligation of the Yershim. But you're right. If he had not stood in court, then the obligation would be an oral loan, and that would not be collected from the Yershim Lekuchis. How can you make that interpretation? But Vaharagukhtani, the Bryce said clearly that the ox killed him in the pit. So how could you say that he went to court and they obligated him and then they died and then you could collect from the Yershim when it said that he died in the pit? So Mervad Rava, no, it's Tomat Sha'asoy that the ox made him into a trefa. It created a mortal defect in the person who was digging the pit. But then he went to court before he ended up dying, and then he died. So because it was Ahmad Bedin, so it's considered a Milva Bishtar, and that's why it could be collected from the Yershim Lekuchas. But the Gemara still asked. But Bamar of Nachman, he said, Tani Tana, a Braisa, was taught that mace, the ox went and pushed him and killed him, the kavarin, it actually buried the guy who was digging the pit in the ground of the pit. It fell on him and buried him into the ground that he was digging. So how can you say that it only made a mortal defect and he went to court and then he died when he actually was buried there? So now the Gemara says, now Hasim over there was the Yastvi Dayani Apum in the Beira. The judges were sitting there by the entryway of the pit. So although he was buried in the ground, but before he passed away, they said guilty. So it's a milva b'shtar, and that's why the chayvu, they held them liable, and that's why it's not difficult to Rabbi Shmuel, because it had the strength of a milva b'shtar, because the court actually found him guilty, even though he was buried there in the pit before he died, and that's why he could collect from the Yershim and Lekuchas. However, the Gemara continues the top of Kvavayin Vamed Alf and concludes this discussion. Amar HaPapa, he says, somewhere in the middle, although we have this Machlikis, Rabbi Yechon and Shlokish on the one hand, and Rabbi Shmuel on the other hand, regarding the Milva Alpeh, if it could be collected from Yershin Lekuchis, which we said is contingent on this concept of Shibud Deraisa or not, Rav Papa goes somewhere in the middle. And he says, Hilchas Aloch is Milva Alpeh regarding an oral loan, Goyvim in HaYershin, it could be collected from the inheritors, but Ve'ena Goyvim Lekuchis, it cannot be collected from consumers. Why? So he explains, each one has its rationale. You could collect from the inheritors. Can they shlei tinel delos b'fnei lavan? They should not close the door in front of borrowers. In other words, if it's going to happen that a person is going to lend money and you're not going to be able to collect from his inheritors, which is a normal thing that it passes on to his inheritors, then people are going to start lending money. So to avoid that problem, the inheritors, who are like an extension of the person himself, they're part of that family. So we said that you, not only could you collect from the person himself, you could collect from his inheritors. But you cannot collect from the consumers, they're less like kalah. Because as we said, a milva aped, the word doesn't get out. So you're going to end up disrupting all of commerce because people are going to stop buying, trusting in the process of buying and selling. Because anytime he buys, I don't know, there might be a lien. What do you mean you don't know? Well, milva b'shtah, I could know. It's documented. Oral loan, I don't know. So to avoid that problem, they said, okay, milva aped cannot be collected from lakuches. Milva b'shtah, yes. But in contrast, by Yershin, where they're an extension of their father, they're so that people should still be able to borrow, so people will not say, hey, I'm not going to lend money because I'm not going to get it back because he dies and boom, his Yershin habit, I can't get it. To avoid that problem, so that the milva peh could even be collected again from the Yershin, but not from the lekuches.